Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me again today. I am very excited to have with me Matthew Leshak, who wrote a book by the name of Fiat Food. I will let him tell the whole story about this, but I'm really excited about this one because this really brings two of the themes together we've been talking about a lot here, one being Bitcoin and just the financial system and how fiat money ruins everything, and the other side being food and just how the health of the USA and the whole world is deteriorating due to the fiat money. So, Matthew Leshak, appreciate you joining me, sir.
Thank you for having me, Ben. It's an honor.
Why don't we start with a bit of your backstory? I know you have some interesting things that happened throughout both your young life, going on to interesting career that sort of set you on this journalism path. So why don't you give us a bit of a background there?
When I was younger, I grew up in the 90s under the USDA food pyramid of 1992, which your younger audience might not remember, but this was a pretty historic movement in food because for the first time, the food pyramid set limits on what kind of foods you should eat and how often. In particular, it shifted the diet from one that was primarily meat-based to one that suggested a lot of grains. And some of your older listeners might remember you went into a pizza shop or a sandwich shop in the 90s anywhere, and you would see they'd have the poster up on the wall. It was like an advertisement. Eat more pizza, eat more Subway bread. It's all good. My parents loved me. My mom's was Italian, and she, you know, made me lots of pasta, but she began shifting our food as well with the diet. So we used to have like steak once a week, and it shifted to, you know, whole grains and pasta, a little more pasta. Salad began replacing other food that we would have too. And when I was a teenager, I became very addicted to sugar and a lot of these really bad foods that they pushed on us. And when I was 15, I got a pretty rare case of cancer. I was an obese kid, and I knew I had been eating very poorly. But when I asked my doctors what the cause of my sickness was, they told me they didn't know. They said it's like maybe genetic, maybe environmental. They didn't really know. But I felt like intuitively that I had done something wrong with my eating. I was eating a lot of seed oils and just a lot of shit, Ben, like tons of it. So that sparked a curiosity that fortunately I recovered, but that for me sparked a curiosity in health. And after I got better, I, you know, went on with my life and I began a career in journalism. So my main job was crime, and I was the guy who parachuted into different cities after a mass shooting. So for about 12 years, any major mass shooting that you've heard of or seen in the news, I've probably been there. I've covered it. I've been on the ground. I've also dealt a lot with politicians, and it led me to the work. I've always loved economics as well, but that was always kind of a side passion of mine. I've done some magazine work on economics, but I've generally been the crime guy. But it led me to Saifedean Ammous's work, first to Bitcoin Standard and then Fiat Standard. And in Fiat Standard, he has a chapter on fiat food that truthfully sounds outrageously insane. It sounds, he makes this contention that our entire food supply has been hijacked by industry, a religious group, all weaponized then by the federal government to obscure the price rises caused by inflation. And I respected the shit out of Safe because his economic work is, I think he's one of the best economic minds in the world, like on a very short list. Yet this sounded really just wacky. So I couldn't help myself and I began really digging into it. And what I discovered was that if anything, his case was understated. When I began to research and I began pulling documents, and in my book, Fiat Food, I have over 200 citations. I've fully requested everything imaginable. And the story that emerges out of that, I think is not being hyperbolic here. I think it's potentially the most devastating possible narrative that's emerged that in the past 300 years of human history, when you look at it in terms of human health and the human toll on life.
Gotcha. And what exactly would you define that devastating narrative to be? Just the fact that we need to eat less meat, more fruits, vegetables, and grains, and basically just more plants and less animal products. Is that, because that's really what I've seen. I grew up probably a little bit later than you. I was born in 94, so not too far after, but similar messaging everywhere. Like everywhere you look, fruits and vegetables are just promoted as this godly thing. You must fill yourself with as much of these as you can. And whole grains are good for you. They give you energy. And meat is always pushed to the side as like bad for your heart and bad for your cholesterol. I remember hearing that even as a little kid. So is that pretty much the message? Is there anything you would add to that as like the message that they pushed out?
I think it's not just the message. So people get messages wrong all the time. Scientists get things wrong all the time. What really hit me was that they manipulated the data from a scientific standpoint. Industry captured the nutrition science as well as this religious group called the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And they basically enacted a 50-year gaslighting campaign to convince us, not for our own best interest, then it wasn't for us, wasn't for people. It was for their own, in terms of the corporates, the corporate interests, their own profit margin. You just make so much more money on Doritos than you do on meat. The profit margin is exceedingly high. The religious groups who have a firm conviction that sex and the sex drive is going to bring the downfall of mankind. And I know that sounds really wacky, but just go look at the literature. This is the way the church was founded. And a government who understands that they can have corruption. They could go fuck around with interns in the Oval Office. They could do all kinds of things and no one will really care. But if the cost of food becomes too high, like what happened in Sri Lanka in 2022, people will riot and they'll kick the leaders out. So they understood this. And when Nixon decoupled from the gold standard on August 15th, 1971, they had a choice to make, because up until then, people generally ate meat and that was the American diet. They ate meat for breakfast, they ate meat for lunch, they ate meat for dinner. But you couldn't decouple from gold and have tons of more dollars not connected to anything hard and not alter the food supply at the risk of people understanding what was happening to their currency. So the degradation of the currency led to the degradation of the food supply naturally, as both kept pushing up, the pressure of one pushed the other one upward. And what the effects of it have been, the degradation of our health. And go to any Walmart in America and look in the line. Like, we're fat and we're sick. And it's a national crisis, but we're all just trying to look away right now and not see it, or not look at the root cause and instead just, you know, look, go to your fat doctor who's wheezing because he has asthma and let him prescribe you a Ozempic.
Right. And I can do you one better. I do a lot of traveling. So I spend a lot of time in airports and I see people from all over the world. And the same thing is happening everywhere. You can just see, same analogy, just looking through a line of people is always the best data you're going to get just as a bystander, because you are just seeing so many bodies in a row and getting a picture of where the world's at. And
you can trust, the line from the 1960s outside of a movie. Go look out at the line outside of The Exorcist or Star Wars, right?
Star Wars is the one I've seen. It's like, everyone's fit and healthy and just kind of goofy nerds back then. And now it's just like these obese, like completely inflamed people that are just doing terrible. And it spans across every country and every society that I've ever seen. Some of them are just a little bit behind the U.S. in terms of like how aggressively we're pushing into that. But I think the most interesting thing people might wonder, so you're talking about how the government wants these cheap processed foods to be like really promoted. You'd never see the government saying, oh, make sure to eat lots of healthy, nutritious meat. It just doesn't seem like that happens. And just recently during the Super Bowl. Do you see? You saw the Super Bowl ad with Joe Biden, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I got great news. I pulled it up in another tab. I'm going to share the screen and play this for listeners real quick.
Super Bowl Sunday. If you're anything like me, you like to be surrounded by a snack or two while watching the big game. You know, when buying snacks for the game, you might have noticed one thing. Sports drinks bottles are smaller. A bag of chips has fewer chips. They're still charging it just as much. And as an ice cream lover, what makes me the most angry is that ice cream cartons have actually shrunk in size, not in price. I've had enough of what they call shrinkflation. It's a ripoff. Some companies are trying to pull a fast one by shrinking the products little by little and hoping you won't notice. Give me a break. The American public is tired of being played for suckers. I'm calling on companies to put a stop to this. Let's make sure businesses do the right thing now.
Is it the greedy businesses that are doing this, Matt? Or is there maybe something else going on here?
Mr. Biden, in my research, the conclusion I came to is there is no like dark room where there's a conspiracy. What it is all these groups benefit. And that's what pushes the momentum forward. So you have corporations benefiting from increased profits, government benefiting from obscuring the price of the real price of real food. So the price of nutrients is still continuously going up. If you want real food, you can't mask inflation because a cow, talk to any farmer or livestock man, it's not a quick fix. A cow, you have to grow the cow, you have to butcher the cow, you have to feed, whole process. You make Cheetos, it's not a process. And then you have these religious groups that have kind of changed a bit. So in the early 1900s, you had the Seventh-day Adventist Church formed by someone named Ellen G. White. And she was a woman, if your audience cares, I can go through it a bit. She, it's a fascinating story.
I'd love to hear the whole story. Yeah, that's a great one.
She gets hit in the head with a rock on her way home from school as a little girl. And she goes into a coma. So she obviously has some kind of brain issue. But she wakes up and she gets revelations from God. And God saying, Ellen, you need to spread the word that all the diseases in mankind are caused by masturbation. And we need to repress the sex drive at any cost. And the reason that people have a sex drive is due to meat. What we need to do is give them more grains. So she ends up forming a Seventh-day Adventist church, and she has a young apprentice named John Harvey Kellogg, and she tasks him and his brother with coming up with what was really vexing her. The way to save mankind and avert the apocalypse was people were eating tons of meat for breakfast. People were eating steak for breakfast and eggs and bacon and sausage, and they needed to switch this. They needed to get something that would repress the human sex drive. So they invented Kellogg's cornflakes. And almost ironically, their science was actually was pretty right on. Meat does increase the human sex drive and grains do repress the human sex drive. But just to tell you what kind of people these were, John Harvey Kellogg was, it's not an overstatement to call him a psychopath. So he was the most famous doctor of this period. He'd go around doing tours. He was the closest equivalent to a celebrity doctor. It's hard to find an equivalent today. Wrote books, gave speeches. And in some of his writings, he talked about pouring carbolic acid on the clitorises of young females to repress the sex drive, caging young men or giving them surgery without anesthesia so that they could remember the pain and associate pain with sex. And if it tells you anything, after he had a fallout with the church, he discovered Ellen White was eating meat. Like a lot of these people who pretend they don't eat meat, they do eat meat. She was very
sounds
fond
familiar.
Of chicken. Yeah. It's of course, cause we're humans. This is our species. But he became a eugenicist and was which is in line against human production. He became a eugenicist and he was responsible for helping pass a law in Michigan that led to over 3,000 women being made to not have children anymore by court order. So That was the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Now, they've changed over time their messaging, but it's all stayed the same. And a protege then of John Harvey Kellogg, somebody named Leanna Cooper, she started the ADA, the American Dietetic Association, which then became formalized in U.S. government as dietary policy. So you have this religious group in charge of American nutrition policy. And to this day, Ben, like 90% of the research that comes out on vegetarianism and meat comes out of one place. It's called Loma Linda University. It's in California. It gets hundreds of millions of dollars of government fiat grants. Every one of its studies comes to the same conclusion that meat is bad, causes disease X, disease Y, disease N. The cure is always vegetarianism, soy. Shocker, the church is run, I mean, the school, Loma Linda University, is run by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So if you go on their board, it's all church people. So basically, when you look at any sort of nutritional study now, it's most likely coming from Loma Linda University, and it's affirming a religious conviction. And it's not a clinical study. It's something called an observational study, which is the equivalent of just passing out flyers. It's nonsense. It's correlation. It doesn't establish causation. So it's just really dumb, but it's not meant to. What I learned in talking to a lot of these people was it's not really meant for real scientists to look at these studies. What it's meant for is to get headlines. So you'll see a headline that says, meat causes cancer. This headline's been a variation of it 1,000 times every year. And people are busy. They have lives to live. They're not me who's dorking out over this stuff. They're not going to go through the study, but they see the headline. And over the years, these headlines have become ingrained in all of us. And it's created a narrative that's just sort of common sense. So now when I say, oh, I hate doing it because it's always awkward. I'm at a restaurant or something and somebody's like, you only eat meat? And I'm like, yes, I only eat meat. And they think you're nuts. It's like, no, I actually only eat the diet that our species have eaten for thousands of years, up until the last 50 years, when we just altered everything. So it's a real interesting web of all these different interests coming together, not a conspiracy as much as everybody's profiting one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy how many pieces there are to that puzzle too, because you've got depending on how far back you look, you've got the agricultural side with Earl Butz, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture in 1971, and the government. I mean, every single piece of that puzzle has some incentive to just feed people more crap and keep them docile, which is something we've seen throughout history. Like the peasants were always given the grains and the vegetables so they didn't have energy to revolt. And so that's always in the back of the government's mind. And people that think that's a crazy conspiracy theory, I mean, I showed you a video of Joe Biden saying everyone should have some snacks and it's just a table full of Oreos. I should probably mention that for listeners. He's literally showing a table full of Oreos and Goldfish crackers and Gatorade and sugar water. And like, they're, like you said, they're jumping the shark right now. They're not even trying to hide it. Like, they're telling people to eat this garbage.
What shocks me is that there isn't anybody in the room who can just show him one of the 7 studies that are out that show the link between sugar and dementia, which seems to be a political liability for him right now. Nobody was like, man, Joe, like, I don't know if we should go out with this. That might be a little too far. No, he's going to literally, again, push this industrial waste that's making everybody, including himself, remarkably ill. And he's going to do it with like self-righteousness.
Yeah. It's wild. And it's truly a sign of clown world just reaching a whole new acceleration point, because people aren't asking any questions about it on average. Like, they just see that and they continue eating their chips and their Gatorade. And people like us who have just thrown all that stuff out the window, just eat meat, we suddenly realize like we can think better. So it's no coincidence that people who are eating this unhealthy food, they literally can't think as well. And it's hard to really understand that until you experience it yourself, really just removing it. And more people are doing that. And to any people listening out there having a few chips here and there, I'm not insulting you, but hey, give it a try for 30 to 90 days. Just cut all that out and just go with red meat and see how you feel. But anyway, we've talked about the players going on here. So we've got, going back to 1971, we've got the big ag, medical industrial complex, and the government all sort of incentivized to push these fiat foods onto people. So where does this, the money printer aspect come in? Because as listeners should know.
Can I mention more player that we left out?
Oh, of course. Yeah, one more.
I apologize. I should have brought this up. I give this an entire chapter. I could have written an entire book on it. I'm contemplating writing an entire book on it. Ooh. The medical industrial complex. So let me bring your audience back to January of 2023. There was a 60 Minutes episode where a doctor named Dr. Fatima Stanford, I believe her name is, she's just an atrocity of a human being, shows up in her white coat, very eloquent, and she's telling everybody that there's been a new breakthrough that the real intelligent people with credentials understand, and that is that you're actually not responsible for being fat. The human being himself or herself is not responsible. She's super smart, right? She's very educated, and she's talking with authority that it's a genetic brain disease.
I've always heard that it's the fast food, that it's the Diet Cokes, that kind of thing, that is the instigator. Is that true?
So I think we have to look at the different causes of obesity as a big pie, and that's one factor. But notice how I'm using this part of the pie, right? But the number one cause of obesity is genetics.
So willpower,
throw that out the window.
And fortunately, they have a cure for this, Ozempic. Now, what wasn't mentioned was that this 60 Minutes episode, which aired in January, was sponsored in large part by Novo Nordisk, the parent company of Ozempic, or that she was a paid sponsor by Ozempic, or that the only other doctor on was also paid for in the past by Ozempic. This comes a few weeks after the Tufts food pyramid came out, which you probably remember, which informed us by the best
and brightest minds.
Best and the brightest minds. These people spent years studying food and nutrition, going to the best universities, credentialed up the ass. And they figured out that, so Fruit Loops are better than eggs and steak. Chocolate soy milk is better than whole milk. It's coordinated, is my point. So within months from that same year, 2023, the American Academy of Pediatrics, for the first time, changes their qualifications for what to do for childhood obesity, Ozempic. My point is, these companies are all like sponsoring the news, the doctor, and the American Pediatric Association is in large part sponsored by corporate interests. And it's an elaborate symphony of gaslighting. And when you just pull back the thread a little bit, you can see it. This was all a marketing campaign. So I think it's best to look at a lot of these nutritional guidelines and these credentialed doctors. They're not giving us information. It's part of a marketing campaign. And the product is us. And what the profit comes in is off of our misery, is off of human sickness. That's their incentive. It isn't to find a drug that we take once and then we're good. That's not going to help us. They need to get something like Ozempic, which you take for life. And if you could get a 12-year-old on it, even better. It's the same textbook strategy that Big Soda used in the 90s and that Big Tobacco used in years past, where you have a product that is, you know, you make the public dependent on it. But there's something bigger I just want to kind of touch on that is even more monumental than that. And I think it's this push by these vile human beings like Dr. Stanford and others who try to take away our ability and control over the most fundamental aspects of our nature, which is our own health. We are no longer responsible for our own health. We have to outsource that to credential authorities, because somehow as humans, we're just not smart enough. And I think that we need to really push back against that narrative more than anything else, that we actually have it in us. They don't need to buy my book. They don't need to listen to podcasts. They don't need to do anything except listen to themselves truthfully and eat the diet natural to humans, absent of the marketing that we see every 5 seconds on television and on the media and everywhere else. I know that was a bit of a tangent, but it's just, I think it's really important to get that out.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is the first time ever where humans are all of a sudden confused about what to eat. This has never happened before. We've always just naturally known for all of our existence that we're hunters, we're carnivores, we eat the meat and we thrive. And throughout the agricultural revolution for the last few thousand years, this is the experiment. This is the fad diet. And yes. it makes me laugh. As you said, when you know, I go through the grocery line with just like mountains of meat in my cart and people just look at it like I have it like a dead child in there or something. And like, this is the natural human diet, people. And they it's so ingrained in people's minds that you're supposed to have plants in a diet, but this has never been something humans ate unless emergency situations, if we failed a hunt and you needed something to hold you over, not starve to death.
Or but, maybe sometimes medicinal purposes plants
yeah,
can be
yeah, true. Mm-hmm.
But don't you think it's funny? It's like, I love Sean Baker. I've been on his show. I find him an inspiration, but like Sean Baker has made this entire platform from literally just being like, we should just eat real food. That's genius.
Yeah.
And he's right. And he's just like, you go on Twitter and he's there eating a giant steak every time. And I can't stop watching it. It's like, yeah. What has happened to us? Like, why is he the breakthrough? Like, something's gone really wrong when the guy who's literally just like, I think we should eat food, like real food. And we're all like, this is a mind blowing theory. But for me, it was, it took me a while to understand it. And I'm glad I did, a little late, but, I've been carnivore now for about a year and a half. I've had some cheat days, but recently I've given up coffee.
Mm.
I'm on day 6. And I remember thinking, how am I going to do this podcast? Like, usually I do podcasts and I'm a thing full of coffee and I'm just chugging it. But I'm all right. I feel okay. Do you do coffee?
You know, I'm actually in a similar boat. I'm trying to kick that one. I refuse to be one of those people that rationalizes that coffee is like okay with carnivore. It's not. It's ground up seed juice.
Yes.
And it's like changing your energy levels. So I 100% I refuse to like try to talk it away, but I haven't 100% gotten it off. I'm about 95%.
It's hard, man.
You're perfect on food. I only put meat in my mouth for food wise, but coffee is actually the one drink. So it's funny you mentioned that.
Well, there's some indicators that it blocks the collagen absorption, which is what freaked me out, because I eat all this meat, so I should have a lot of collagen. So I'm on day 6. It gets better. You know, like the first few days were really bad, but now I feel okay.
Yeah. Well, you look great. You look like you're thriving coffee free. So I'm excited for this new adventure.
My family might have a different contention, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
So let's talk about the money printer a little bit, because that is what us Bitcoiners just love to dive into constantly. And we've sort of established there's a whole lot of big money in this. It's all incentivized to get the population onto this cheap industrial waste. It's very cheap to keep producing. And we could also maybe get into how that was actually a big reason that the government wanted that, was to hide the inflation numbers. So 1971 comes and goes. All of a sudden, the U.S. has a shiny new money printer. We can print all the money we want. And how do things change after that? How does the dynamics of people's diet and health change after the government can give money to anything it wants to for free?
Yeah. So just to go back a little bit, August 15, 1971, Nixon delivered the Nixon shock. And at the time, he was kind of forced into it. So on August 14th, 1971, Americans could no longer go to the gold window and exchange their dollars for gold, but foreign countries could. And this was a really big restraint on printing of dollars. because you could only print so many at the risk of too many of these countries redeeming their promissory notes for their gold. But of course, government did what government does, which is it still printed out more dollars than it had in gold reserves. So this created a bit of a crisis. It was evident even under Lyndon Johnson, who was before Nixon. And in one example, the price of eggs went up a lot. And according to a book published by one of his staffers named Samuelson, he told a story about how Lyndon Johnson was extremely upset about the price of eggs because he was still assuming he would run for re-election. And he had his Surgeon General write a phony press release that said, eggs are going to kill everybody. So the demand for eggs went down and then the price stabilized. So just to show your audience a bit how the government's always been very savvy to the price of food in connection with being able to retain political power. But Nixon, by the time he got into office, all of this debt had accumulated and countries were beginning to call in their gold. So he was forced almost to say, okay, we're going off the gold standard, because the truth is America broke its promise. The promissory note of those papers was already broken by the amount of papers in print by the lack of gold to back them. So by going off of the gold standard, it freed the government to print as many of these dollars as it wanted to, which if you really think about it, and just like in higher terms, it gave America the most powerful weapon in the history of the world, because Americans weren't the only ones using dollars. The American dollar at that point was the foundational piece. As gold was the foundation to the dollar was the foundation piece to these other countries' currencies all around the world. So we had the ability, once we went off the gold standard, to not just inflate the American currency, but the whole world currency, which is just like remarkable. I think the fiat money printer is the most powerful weapon in the history of the world, because it could take, by me being able to control the dollar that you earn, Ben, you don't earn that dollar because I can print more of it. So you actually don't own your own labor, which is a really interesting thing when you think about it. The person who owns the money printer owns your labor because they're in control of how much can be printed. So when the federal government wanted to weaponize not just people's money, the entire productive labor of the world to an aim, it can accomplish that. And it accomplishes that through grants and all kinds of just flooding money into. And one of the things they did after 1971 was they began flooding money into very cheap food alternatives to tilt the scale. So you're wondering why you go to Mexico and they have cane sugar in their Coke, yet we have corn syrup. The reason is because we incentivize through subsidies created by fiat money printing corn. So corn is everywhere. So is soy and so is sugar. These are the three most subsidized products in America. And the fiat money printer is the creator of the distortion. So one of the things in my book is I take section 3 and I talk about how to cure this. And I talk about, and people are always like, how does Bitcoin cure this? Well, to be more specific, Bitcoin doesn't fix the diet. What Bitcoin does is it destroys the fiat money printer, which creates the distortions. So when the distortions are no longer needed because of fiat, then there's no incentive to manipulate the food supply. Then people can just eat human-specific diets like we used to pre-1970. But because fiat has to constantly be chasing all these dollars that are everywhere and it's crushing the purchasing power of the American public, what happens is when that goes away, everything like goes back to normal, because it's like it red pills reality, where we're not like, it's these distortions that were put on us that happen when you walk into a restaurant and you order a steak with a side of steak with a side of bacon, when they're all like, you're crazy, why are you drinking your soy milk and eating your grain? That ends in time. But right now, yeah, People like us and Sean and Saifedean, we're all fighting against the fiat money printer. And I think Bitcoin's going to be the solution, because Bitcoin and fiat can't coexist. They can't. I know there's been argument about this, and I'm not an economist, but my understanding is the hardest currency throughout history, if safe's taught me anything, the harder currency wins out over time. And history is littered with examples of that. That's why I think eventually it's going down. And that's a great thing for everybody, especially the health of the American and the world.
Absolutely. And the central banks are part of this. Like, they're basically just an arm of the government, like the Federal Reserve. And we were talking about examples earlier of when the government and the government's many agencies are literally promoting these diets on people. Another example that I heard when I listened to your podcast with the Meat Mafia earlier, just kind of getting prepped, and you guys talked about the 2021 Thanksgiving tweets by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve literally tweeted out, and I wrote it down here. It says, a Thanksgiving dinner serving of poultry costs $1.42. A soybean-based dinner serving with the same amount of calories costs 66 cents and provides almost twice as much protein. So why is the Federal Reserve trying to make me eat tofu? What, like, why do they care about...
Their whole system hinges. If people understood that... So you got to also remember, in the 1970s, there was a book that came out in the early 70s called The Population Bomb. And the big concern then wasn't global warming. It wasn't any of these new phony things that people come up with. It was overpopulation. That was the biggest concern, specifically that we were going to overpopulate and run out of food. So this was pushed. These same religious people throughout the past 50 years have always showed up, and they changed their religion a bit. Now I feel like don't eat cows to change the weather. Like, that's kind of the new thing, but it's not really that new. You could go back to the 1600s, and when sometimes rain wouldn't come, they burn women who were eccentric because they believed they were witches. I mean, the belief that man controlled the climate has been like something that's been going on. It's a little more sophisticated now, but it's the same thing. The peasants must sacrifice to change the weather. But when you talk about the Federal Reserve and the tofu, I want to bring up something even more timely, which is this idiot CEO from Kellogg's. Have you heard this moron talking?
Yeah, I have. This is like within the last week. We're just getting rapid-fire examples here.
Like, your book is like coming to life. This idiot, why they let the idiot talk on TV is amazing to me, because that's not going to help their shareholders. This moron goes on television and begins telling everybody how life is so good because prices are going up. But guess what? They have healthy cereal. So they're going to eat cornflakes for dinner, not for breakfast anymore. For breakfast and dinner, we're all just going to be eating cornflakes. And that's awesome because it saves the environment, changes the weather, and it's cheap. I mean, you can't. I feel like sometimes I'm having these conversations and I feel like it's an ongoing Babylon Bee meme.
Yeah. Yeah. We could just make a whole hour long episode just listing off example after example. It's,
and dude, we should do really that. Just we should need totally to.
Yeah. All people need to do is just wake up to it and just at some point they have to push it too far, right? I mean, there just has to be a time. I keep thinking that this last one's going to be it, because the one that was my favorite was the one that's saying, like, exercise is dangerously correlated with being right wing. Like, if you exercise, you're going to become a, like, Republican bigot. That was on MSNBC, like, top of the headlines. And, I mean, people are actually reading that and thinking, like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, being healthy makes you on the bad political team. It's just, ugh.
Well, you can see there's a real divide happening. And I think that was one of the blessings of COVID, which was that it was awful, an awful period of humanity, obviously. But one of the benefits was it was a reveal. Like, so I feel like people who think critically, they don't all agree with me, but you'd see that something went terribly wrong there, that we were lied to. And we might disagree on the boundaries, but you could tell that something went horribly wrong in terms of the information that we were given, the censorship that we went on. No one talked about diet during COVID, which turned out to be one of the biggest comorbidities. In fact, Krispy Kreme and McDonald's were sponsoring the vaccine.
Yeah.
So you had the idiot mayor of New York, who I know personally. He's a moron. I've dealt with Mayor de Blasio, who was mayor at the time, many times. And I can tell your audience who's thinking that this guy is intellectually stunted, I can confirm it for all of them, that their intuition is completely right. The guy is just... I'm sure his mom loves him, but yeah, he's on there eating Krispy Kreme donuts and McDonald's because they're offering vaccines. It felt Orwellian to me, like almost some sort of dystopian joke that we're all part of. Meanwhile, we find out that the biggest comorbidity to COVID was shockingly, it's people who are really sick and fat. And that's sad. And I don't think it's compassionate to pretend like these people who are really sick are not sick, that they're not at risk, that the foods, the fiat foods that they're eating, all these grains, which have led to metabolic destruction of their health, I don't think there's anything compassionate about pretending like that's not hurting them. You see somebody with a rash, you point it out because that could spread and it could kill them. And it's led to a lot of hard discussions with people I've cared about in my life. But it's hard because what you said is true. We're fighting against a complete tidal wave of misinformation. You want to talk about misinformation? 8 to 11 portions of grains a day is the ultimate misinformation and recipe for metabolic just degradation.
Yeah, and it's just such a steep mountain to climb, like you said, trying to help the people you care about, because all of the messaging they're getting is that it's not your fault. It's genetics. Like you said, that, you know, the idiot doctor coming on 60 Minutes and saying like obesity is genetic. And so people really just think that life is unfair and they just got screwed by genes and they just eat their sorrows away and it just becomes a loop. And not everyone gets obesity from it. Sometimes people get like skin problems or, you know, heart disease or arthritis. This is another thing I've learned through the carnivore rabbit hole, is how all of these different chronic diseases, not just obesity, really trace back to food. The fact that people are eating this food and it's just hurting their body in slightly different ways depending on the person. But it's such a emotional thing for people, the food that they eat. So trying to tell them to eat a different food is really hard to get through. And like you said, when we just walk around with our big piles of meat, everyone thinks we're insane. And even trying to have a conversation with them about why this is the best way to eat, it's a huge challenge to even the people that care about us. And so sometimes we have to choose, like, am I going to put my relationship with this person potentially at risk by telling them the truth? That's where we're at right now.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a sad place, but on the flip side, it does seem like podcasts like your own and so many others, there's a really, another great thing about COVID was that people stopped trusting credentialed authority. We stopped outsourcing our reasoning process in terms of decision-making on key aspects of our life. Clearly, Dr. Anthony Fauci told us a lot of lies. Like, he wasn't being honest with us. And we now know that because his current Senate testimony, which was leaked, contradicted what he told us. There was no science between 6 feet apart. The effect of masks was negligible, if any. They knew this the whole time. I mean, there's a lot of things that we were lied to about. And I think there's a real silver lining in the fact that we are no longer going to our credentialed authorities. My doctor, when I look at my doctor and I see that my doctor is overweight and wheezing and telling me, and I'm like, well, I run 4 miles every day. I feel fucking fantastic. And he's like, well, looked at your blood. It seems like cholesterol is a little high. Maybe you should just go back to what you were. Fuck you. No. Like, what is it?
Take a statin. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do this. And like, you're unhealthy. And it makes me just think of like all the mistakes that I made in the past where I've outsourced my thought system because I outsourced my decision-making because I just assumed that this person went to school. They had all these credentials. And just recently I went to a friend's house and there was a party and there was this young doctor, eye doctor there. And I was like, oh, you're an eye doctor. Tell me about, like, what's the best thing for vision? And I remember she's you know, gone to school. And she very earnestly looked at me and goes, you stay out of the sunlight. You eat a lot of carrots. You don't eat red meat. And I and you go for your checkup once every 3 months for eyes. And I'm looking at this girl, and she's wearing glasses that are like this thick, and my vision's fine. And I'm thinking, this lady's a moron. And she wasn't born an idiot. Like, she went to school and became filled with information that wasn't true. And I think that's also part of the carnivore. I don't know if this was like this for you. Part of the carnivore path for me was unlearning so much bullshit that I had been taught that just wasn't true. Like, even the normalization of coffee. No, people always drink coffee. Coffee's fine. It's how I'm a writer. I have to drink coffee. Yeah, no, it's hard. You have to just burn it all to the ground and kind of like start building up thought anew. Do you find that in your path?
Absolutely. And I've interviewed quite a few carnivore doctors out there. I don't know if you're aware of Anthony Chaffee. He's kind of the guy that brought me into this whole field. He's a legend. And him, Sean Baker, and there are tons of other doctors who were able to just escape that swamp of lies that they went to medical school for. But it's really rare. Most people just are so beat down and exhausted from that schooling that they just, I mean, it's designed in a way to where you have to complete these tests or you don't get the degree. So you have to answer things incorrectly in order to make it through.
Yeah, and most medical hospitals are sponsored by Big Pharma. Right. And then the doctors are constantly being barraged by Big Pharma, and then they're incentivized through their school to like basically look at symptoms on their sheet and then figure out which drug goes for which symptoms, and then you hand it off and your hands are clean. I mean, and if you don't do that, you could be kicked out of the practice. Like, Sean Baker was one of the leading orthopedic surgeons in the country, and suddenly he's being fired because he was hurting their bottom line.
And I listened to his podcast with Rogan again just a few days ago to kind of refresh my memory, and literally he was fired because he was helping people not need surgery. And they didn't like that because they were making less money. He was a cash cow for them because everyone, he had like his face up on billboards and magazines. Like you said, he was like a top surgeon. And so he was like a big cash cow for them. They loved this guy. And all of a sudden he realizes, you know, like all these people keep coming back for another surgery and that's not right. Like, I want to give them the advice they need to not need surgery and to become healthier. So he started giving them more like lifestyle guidance. And all of a sudden, less people needed to come in for surgery. And they weren't having that. They kicked his ass out because he then became a liability to their profits. It's crazy.
It is. The only, you know, one of the only downfalls I've had with carnivore in the beginning was, and I've had a lot of people helping me through it, was in the beginning, I do a basketball tournament with high school kids here every Saturday at my house. And I felt like I didn't have like that extra like boost I could get. But once I began supplementing with electrolytes a little bit, and now I'm into raw milk. So that's kind of replaced my electrolytes and I feel problem solved.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to sort of figure it out. But one thing that we can agree for sure is that it's just real food. The first step is just cutting. I mean, the processed food, ultra processed food, that needs to be cut out by everybody yesterday. That should not even be in a conversation. And the further down the conversation we go, that the more we realize that each of the plants we've been eating is also not great. And then you eventually come to carnivore with like dairy as sort of a supplement potentially. Everyone's sort of different on dairy. Like, some people have a little bit of a negative reaction to it, but I always recommend just go straight red meat and water for 30 days to completely cleanse your system with the ultimate elimination diet, and then add those things back in and see how it works for you.
But when you talk about the incentive process, the incentive system, and you're completely right about it. Let's go back to one of my favorite people, Dr. Fatima Stafford. And so after her big revelation on 60 Minutes, where she told us that eating does not have any relationship with how we feel and how we act. It's a brain disease. The medical community didn't punish her. In fact, she got rewarded by getting a seat on the Nutrition Dietary Guidelines Council. So this genius this intellectual titan is going to be one of the people deciding the next dietary nutrition guidelines that come out. And people might think, oh, who cares what the government says about nutrition guidelines? Oh, it matters, because those are the guidelines that will be implemented in every school across all of our country, this entire country. So all of our school children will be on this stupid diet that they do, that's damaging and it hurts people. Also, all the prisoners in jails, nursing homes, hospitals. And it's just outrageous, because hat tip to Nina Teicholz on this. Her nutrition foundation uncovered that 95% of everybody sitting on the panel for that figures out what our guidelines are going to be are paid for by corporations of big food. So you have to have a lot of cognitive dissonance. You have to have the naivety to think that the money flowing in is not going to influence the results. It's awful. And it's not a conspiracy. You can literally just go on the USDA website, for instance, and look at their sponsorships. And it's a who's who of Dannon, you know, of like big, gross food. It's like, it's that Biden commercial where he's complaining because the dementia president is complaining because his tub of ice cream is shrinking. Like, that's his complaint. That's the president's complaint right now. That's what he's going to invest his political capital in, the ice cream shrinking, shrinkflation, right? You saw it. It's outrageous. And at some point, I think people are going to look, fair-minded people who are not already too metabolically compromised by all these foods are going to be able to look at it and say, ah, this is wrong. This is right. They're lying to us.
And one of the things that I would say, the main thing from that Biden ad that stuck with me, and this could be like a good final question to kind of take this off into the sunset, is that he's pointing the blame at corporations and completely trying to obfuscate the fact that the government is the one creating that inflation, is making things more expensive. Like, forget about even the type of food he's talking about. It's this persistent narrative we're given that the corporations and the CEOs are greedy and bad, and that the inflation has nothing to do with the increasing money supply. So could you tell us, sort of just bringing Bitcoin into this in the final second here, what is really the problem with the increasing prices of the good food, even the shitty food, as he showed, is increasing. Everything's increasing. What is the actual problem that's causing that? And how do we fix this by buying Bitcoin and eating meat like a bunch of weirdos?
Inflation is the cause. The printing of money is the cause of inflation. Inflation, it comes from Latin inflatio, to inflate the money supply. So for most of the English language, we've understood, and since the Federal Reserve started keeping track, inflation was always defined as an expansion of our money supply. This became politically untenable after 1971. So they keep changing the definition of inflation. Now, every now and then, it's like the weather. Taylor Swift became the cause of inflation, according to some news articles recently. So the excuses are endless. And what Bitcoin allows us to do is it circumvents the fiat system. And the two cannot coexist. I believe Michael Saylor believes they can, and he knows so much more about this than I do. I just don't see it. I don't see how. I would encourage your audience to listen to his argument about it, but I think that one will have to over, and I think the dollar right now is in a death spiral, but there's an opportunity here for everybody. And you want to reclaim your self-autonomy. I think that's what it really all comes down to. The ability to retake our lives is not separate from our ability to keep what we earn and to reclaim our health. That's why there's this huge convergence between Bitcoiners and carnivores. It's because when you skeptically pull the blinders off and you look and see what the world is for what it really is, even just a glimmer of it, because I don't think I can see fully yet. I'm trying, but what you do see is that they're trying to take that power away from us. They're trying to take our productive wealth away from us. They're trying to take our health away from us. And they do that by first taking our self-autonomy away. And to reclaim that, to reclaim our money, to reclaim our health is the key to like the future that I think you and me and your audience all want to live in.
Fix the money, fix the food, fix the world. I think that those things really do come together and it's all so intertwined. And the fact that you took one of Safdien's chapters out of the Fiat Standard and turned it into a whole book is freaking awesome. You could make a book about basically every one of those chapters because all these things are so connected. And
he's really a genius.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming by, man. Is there anything else that we could, where can people find you? I'll make sure to put the link to your book, Fiat Food, in the description. Is there anywhere else people can find you?
So I worked with Safe on the book. He was generous to add a few chapters at the end. I'm on Amazon. I'm really bad at social media. I'm trying to be clever on Twitter. It's just lots of epic fails there, but I'm at Matthew Leshak. And no, man, thanks for having me, Ben. I appreciate this. You're very thoughtful and I appreciate what you're doing.
Excellent. Well, I'm really glad we could get it done, man. I'll be keeping in touch, following you and following the clown world shenanigans together, and it'll be good times had by all.
Cool, man. Thanks.
See you later.